Judges 15. And it happened afterward, in the days of wheat harvest, that Samson visited his wife with a kid of the goats. And he said, I will go into my wife to the inner room. And her father would not allow him to go in. Her father said, I certainly said that you would surely hate her. And I gave her to your companion. Is not her sister, the young one, better than she? Please, let her belong to you instead of her. And Samson said to them, this time I will be blameless regarding the Philistines, though I am doing evil with them. And Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches and turned tail to tail and put a torch between the two tails in the middle. And he kindled fire on the torches and sent them out into the grain stalks of the Philistines and burned from the stacks to the grain stalks and to the vineyard and the olive yard. The Philistines said, who has done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took away his wife and gave her to his companion. And the Philistines went and burned her and her father with fire. Samson said to them, though you do this, yet I shall be avenged on you, and afterwards I will stop. And he struck them, hip on thigh, a great slaughter, and went down and lived in the cleft of the rock Etam. The Philistines went up and pitched in Judah, and were spread out in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against me? And they said, why have you come up to bind Samson, to do this to him as he has done to us? And to 3,000 men of Judah, he went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? And what is this you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I did to them. And he said to him, we have come down to bind you, to give you into the hands of the Philistines. Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not fall on me yourselves. And they spoke to him, saying, no, but we will certainly bind you and will give you into their hand. But we certainly will not kill you. They bound him with two thick cords, new ones, and brought him up from the rock. He came to Lehi, and the Philistines shouted to meet him. The Spirit of Yahweh came upon him, and the thick cords which were on his arms were like flax, which they burn with fire. His bonds melted from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of an ass and put out his hand and took it, and he struck 1,000 men with it. Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, a heap, two heaps, with the jawbone of an ass I have killed 1,000 men. It happened when he finished speaking, he threw the jawbone out of his hand. He called that place the hill of the jawbone, and he was exceedingly thirsty. He said to the Lord, surely you have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now I am dying with thirst and will fall into the hand of the uncircumcised. God broke open the hollow place, which is in Lehi, and water came out of it. He drank, and his spirit returned. He was revived. Therefore, its name is called the Fountain of the Praying One, which is in Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines.
Thank you, Jeff, for reading Judges chapter 15. This is our next step of Samson's life. Anybody have any questions or comments about Samson or what you read? Yes, Tammy.
Why would the Philistines have come against Judah when Samson was a Danite?
Yes, that's a good question. We'll hopefully explore that shortly. Samson did a pretty good job trying to keep the Philistines after him only, which is quite talented. But Philistines knew something, that somebody was retaining him or keeping him going. Oops, my book fell down. Any other questions? Yes.
Regarding when the Philistines came to Judah, where it says Samson says, "I've done to them what they've done
to me." Right.
There seems to be he burned their fields before they burned his father-in-law and his wife.
Though, right. Right.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yes. We should be able to get to that today. It shouldn't be too difficult. Philistines are, there's a lot of nuances I might be able to talk about. It takes a little bit of effort to do some background. I'm going to have to get to that when I get there, because I get just blurted out now. So I'll get there when we discuss the part. Yes, Bill.
How come his wife's dad was denying him the right to be with his wife?
Well, Philistine law is not too much different than Israelite law at this time. A wife is yours unless you don't want her.
Right.
When you don't want her, she's no longer your wife. It's detestable. The Israelite law gives a bill of divorcement. And other cultures are quite similar. If you don't want the person that is supposed to be your wife, well, then you can divorce her. Well, in this case, her father made the divorce without consulting Samson. Just issued a divorce. Not that he's allowed to do so. He's not. It's actually even against Philistine law to do it. But he did it anyway. And he did it openly. And the Philistines did nothing about it.
Not until this point.
Not until it cost them something. Because note, the common when they said, who did this? Oh, Samson, for what his father-in-law did with his wife. Did they immediately go after Samson? Not at all. Why? Because they knew he was justified in what he did. Because of what happened. They knew full well that his father-in-law and his supposed-to-be wife, who was living with another man at this point as husband and wife, which they were not legally married in either culture, it was illegal. And they knew it. And so they went ahead and said, okay, yes, Samson, you're right to destroy all of our crops, meaning punished all of the Philistines of the area for what we allowed this guy and this daughter to do. And we didn't do anything about it. So they were right at that point. What gets them is that Samson says, okay, yeah, you were right, but you should have done that before I burnt your field. You're double punishing. Then Samson hits him again. Because they double punished somebody. They punished his wife and father-in-law twice. And that he punished all of them, including his wife and father-in-law, when he burned the field. That's it. That's good enough. Now it's murder if they go out and kill his wife and father-in-law. See, they should have done it before he burnt the field, not after they've already been punished. They've been being hit twice. As we call it double jeopardy in our culture if you try to get tried for the same crime twice. You can't be killed more than once. Yes, Ellie.
He may not have done it if they had taken it in their own hands.
Exactly.
Had they dealt with it.
Yeah, adultery was not acceptable in Philistine society any more than it was Israelite society. Now, not that harlotry was not acceptable. We're talking adultery. There's a difference. Adultery wasn't acceptable, and they didn't think about it. But everybody there knew full well who Samson was. He grew up in the area. He was well known at this point in time.
Yes.
All right. They know who his wife is.
And most of them would have probably gone to the wedding because wedding.
Exactly. It was a big affair. Everybody knew who he was. So they knew full well that there was no bill of divorcement given by Samson. He just left because of what had happened. Not that he wasn't coming back. He just happened to have left. So we'll get to that. We'll go there a little more detail when we get to that point. As is before, Samson likes to talk in parables and wordplay, which we'll get to there when he does the whole
riddles.
He likes that. I respect him for it because I'm not very good at riddles, but he has fun with it. He's a very smart person. Okay, any other questions before we just jump into this? Yes.
Any abstinence that he goes to her during the time of the wheat harvest?
Yes, it's important he mentions wheat harvest. Yeah, which was that's my first point because it's the first verse. Time of the wheat harvest. What time of year is this?
Summertime.
It's approaching summertime. It's approaching early summer because that's usually about when the wheat's ready. It's one of the later crops that show up sometime in June, late May, early June, when it's harvested. I mean, there are a lot of grain crops. Almost all of them are harvested from what we call February through till June, end of June. Or latest early July, but that's only certain districts or areas of the country which has that kind of weather. Wheat harvest, one of the later ones. Why is he mentioning wheat harvest? The Shavuot time, we're approaching that. Now, he got married roughly around springtime, which is only a few months later, a few months different. There's only a couple months here that travel from when he's killed a few Philistines for the changes of clothing from them with the lion and the honey. And I was going back a few months later, okay, now he's remembering his wife, brings a goat to her. But he brings up the wheat harvest because he's going to burn their field. All their crops are still there unharvested. All right, this is a large point of money-making time for Israel and Philistines. This is the wheat harvests. They're the most abundant. They have the most amount of money allocated to them, and they're one of the most, more useful grains. If you burn them, what happens? There's no food. You have to wait a year before rain comes back again.
Kills the whole economy.
Yeah, exactly. It destroys a lot of things. And he didn't just destroy the grain. He destroyed their vineyards. He destroyed their olive groves, which were not ready yet. Vineyards are still growing. They're just beginning to sprout leaves. Yes, Tammy.
Interesting consequence of this. One interesting consequence of this. If you don't have food in your area,
mm-hmm.
you have to get it somewhere.
Yes. And guess where they're going to go?
And guess where they're going to have to buy it?
From the Israelites. Yes, Ellie.
It's also interesting that you've got a three with your boxes.
Yes. He uses it a lot.
But you've got the wheat harvest, which is the bread. You've mm-hmm. got the olive oil harvest, which is the candles.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the grape vineyards, which is the wine.
Yeah.
You've got the components.
The bread, wine, and the Kiddush ceremony. He is a messianic figure for a reason. And he destroys all of those, for the Philistines at least, not for the Israelite parts. So yeah, Tammy's absolutely correct. You have a whole region that has just lost all of its crops. Not just the crops immediately, but I mean, the whole rest of the year, the crops are dead. And since they're grapevines, most likely for many years to come, because it takes a long time to regrow those things. Olive trees, the same way. It takes a long time to regrow them. They don't come back the next year. You've got to replant them from scratch. Well, a few might come back, but not very many. Not enough to actually grow and actually have a production. So they've got to redo all that. It takes years to rebuild those. Grain comes back a year later. You just replant. Oh, that's a little harder to redo. So it's a good time of year for it. Meaning to do an assault. Anyway, so he shows up. Let's see. Well, I'll get into the similes later as to where the parallelism start showing up. But so we'll come back to verse 1 shortly. But let's see. Okay, so verse 3 and 4, I'm just going to scroll on down through here. First of all, he goes to his father-in-law, says, hey, I want to see my wife, kid goat. It's a reconciliation. Thank you. I can't pronounce it right. It's a way of atoning for things that are once wrong. Goats are used exclusively for remission of sin, to literally get rid of it. Scapegoat is quite commonly done. That's the key, is scapegoat. Nearly every holy day there is has at least one or two goats being killed. Why? Because they erase sin. Not to be confused with a lamb. A lamb covers it up. Goats are designed to erase it completely. That's its function. Now, it doesn't mean that physically do it. It's just an animal. But that's the symbolism of it. So he's bringing the goat forward to erase the past, erase what was once done, and start fresh with his wife again. Yes, Tammy.
The first thing that I thought of when you said, you talked about this image of a man bringing a goat to a woman, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Judah and Tamar.
Tamar, yes.
He thought he was going to a prostitute of some kind.
Right.
Whether it's a temple prostitute, which would be a little bit more high ranking
than a streetwalker, whatever.
Mm-hmm. He thought he was going to a prostitute. He brings if I'm not mistaken, she asked him for that as payment.
I don't recall off the top of my head.
She brought that up. If she said, "What is my?" If he asked her, "What is my fee?" She says, "My fee is a goat."
Mm.
The ring and staff.
Bring the staff. Yeah, yeah. That was to prove that he was.
That would come in later, but think about this goat is that he had done her wrong in every way possible.
Oh yeah, completely.
And And so the goat thing was very symbolic of that. But going back to Samson here for a second,
mm-hmm.
and the father for a second, from if the wedding was around Pesach, give or take,
mm-hmm.
and this is around Sukkot, give or take, that's what, 2-3 months the most?
Roughly, yeah.
Shavuot, sorry. You know, you could understand a father, like if a man, if his daughter's wife had gone away for 2 years, 3 years, 5
right.
years,
right.
and said, you know what, he must be dead.
Or
you
not,
know,
he's not
on.
Coming back,
he's
right,
not
right,
coming
right.
back.
This is a short span of time.
Yeah.
This is very short. This
yeah.
is very short. And there is no justification for his actions by any means, mm-hmm. which is, of course, why he was burned. okay, so he goes there, he says no, gave it to a companion. By the way, the companion is also a Philistine. Remember from last time we talked about this, when Samson went to the wedding party selected his groomsmen. They were all Philistines, and there were no Israelites at his wedding. He was the only one. So, well, yeah, he's the only one. There may have been, like, his power or something, I don't know, but what was that?
You're like when you go to Vegas and they have stand-in witnesses for you.
Yeah, exactly. The local drunk that's nearby. So he goes...
I chose Elvis.
So he goes to his father-in-law, Pazai, gave it to another man. He gets upset, goes off and destroys the destroys it. Sets fire during the harvest, caused most damage, as I mentioned before. As I also mentioned, the Philistines knew why he was upset, and they didn't go after him. They went after his father and wife, father-in-law and wife. That was accurate retribution. None of these are really profound statements. Quite normal, simple story. Samson's response in verse 7. I like the way my little book here words it, because it just makes more sense. let's see. Samson said to them, this is the Philistines, after they had burned his father-in-law and his wife, "If only you had done so before. Now I will avenge myself against you, and afterwards I will stop." Then he struck them calf upon thigh, a great blow. What does that mean, calf upon thigh? It's an odd statement.
Yes, it is.
Calf upon thigh. Well, it's not the calf like we think of, like a cow. It's actually like physically the calf of your leg and the thigh of your leg. So what does that mean, calf upon thigh, a great blow?
Crippled them?
Yes, that is a good way of wording it. Any other things? Why would you use that statement? Why did you just say he struck them with a great blow?
Yeah.
We could accomplish the same thing, right? Well, what's the difference? Well, why does he throw this extra statement in there, or the Bible throw the extra statement, calf upon thigh?
What is it symbolic of?
Well, it is. Yeah, you have to go to symbolic of. Well, calf upon thigh is an unusual statement. There are a lot of different theories about it. But there's one that's pretty consistent. It's actually a military term. Not modern military by any means. A long time ago military term. Who was the calf and who was the thigh? In the military, when you have cavalry, you have, you know, various ranking people. There are certain members who use their calf as their primary function. There are certain members who use their thigh as their primary function.
Walkers and horsemen.
Walkers and horsemen.
Yeah.
Foot soldiers or riders. It's a military term.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right, make logical sense. Calf upon thigh. So what does he mean, calf upon? So why? How is that? No, granted, the military term is standard Jewish tradition. It's a military term. It's been that way, and they've accepted that for a long, long time. That's what it means. So why is that military term, foot soldiers or walkers and riders, being used here? How does it apply? Yes, Tammy.
He didn't just strike out at one socioeconomic class of the community.
No, he didn't.
He didn't strike out just after all poor people or all rich people.
Which is, foot soldiers are poor people, and riders are
the
wealthier ones.
Yes, yes.
They're the commanders, they're the cavalry. Yeah, we remember the cavalry. Oh, the cavalry's here to save us. Why? Because they're so great and wonderful. Calf upon thigh. There was no discrimination? No discernment? No distinction. That's the word. No distinction. I'll get it right. It takes a while. I'll get it right. Between one group of Philistines and another group of Philistines. All right? Those who were responsible for the death of his father-in-law and wife and those who were not directly responsible. There was no distinction. He had them all. That's what it meant. Kaphon. It's a very unusual statement. It's a complicated way of saying something. And it is the same term you would use if you're in the military. If you are an army and you're going to strike another army, kaphon thai, what does that mean? No survivors. No survivors. Don't distinguish between those who are wounded and those who are not wounded. Don't distinguish those who are physically carrying a flag or carrying a sword. Makes no difference. Kaphon thai is an exceedingly great blow. It is a deadly blow. Yes, Carrie.
Did you have any translations that have said hip and thigh?
Yes.
Okay, because I have two.
Yeah, that's the English translation of it. English translation uses the word hip.
It's just a problematic...
It's just, the word itself actually is calf. It's the lower part upon the leg. Yes, Ellie.
That would be all-out war.
Yes, by a single man. All that war. Now, it's not that he went out and wiped out all Philistines that ever existed.
Just that area.
Of course. He's one human being. He may be the most strongest one available, but he's still only one man. He's not taking out all Philistines. Why? Because Israel didn't cry out to God yet and say, God, please save us from the Philistines.
He's dealing with the Philistines, not the Israelites.
Right, right. So this is a distinction. He doesn't sit there and save them. He's not supposed to save them because they haven't asked for salvation. They haven't said, God, please help us. We repent for what we've done. That hasn't happened. And it doesn't happen for a long time, actually. So, that's just what the military... It doesn't mean a whole lot. It's just an interesting way of wording something. It's just quite... It's just an odd statement, because it catches your eye. What in the world does this mean? There are more than other translations than just that, but it's pretty consistent. It's all about military. And it's a military all-out war concept. Okay, so I just want to get past that, because I thought that was just an odd statement. So, what's the response? Well, if you declare all-out war, guess what? What's your enemy going to do? Okay, let's go to war. Next verse, Philistines come out for war.
Against Judah.
Against Judah. Why Judah? The Tang brought this up. Why Judah? He's Danite. He's from this tribe up here, and I didn't write up all of it. Dan's up here, and Judah's down here.
Yeah, but Samson was hiding in Edom.
Exactly. Who was taking care of him? Who was shielding him?
Judah.
Well, Judah was. He may have been Dan. It doesn't make a difference. We went after the Taliban, and who was shielding them? Afghanistan. Guess what? Okay, we'll take them out too. Same principle. You're shielding him. So it doesn't make much difference. The Philistines knew full well where he was. Well, why would they know? Why did they think Judah had him? Why wouldn't they have just did they examine all of the country or region of Dan first? Did they go out and household and upon household and find out, is Samson here? Would they finally found him? No. Why? Philistines already own Dan.
What?
Already own the tribe of Dan. They already own that region. They already own the entire, mostly, region of Judah, meaning that they are in control over it. They have most of the region of Benjamin, as well as a small chunk of Ephraim and Manasseh. They already have control. So they know where he's at. Why? Because they have Philistine spies everywhere, just like everybody else does. And guess who? Judah has? Judah has Philistine spies, Judah spies, Israelite spies, and Philistines. They're still at war. The war never stopped. It's just at a lull at this point. There's a reason why Samson was able during his wedding to go out and slaughter, I forgot, was it 20? I think it was 20 Philistines and took their garments, or 30?
30,
thank you.
Yeah,
30 garments. And did they come after him?
No.
No, they didn't. Well, that's odd. Why not? That's part of war. Exactly. This is a war. They knew they were fighting the Israelites. Just because they had control over a chunk doesn't mean they have control over all. You may lose soldiers periodically. You may lose people, lose citizens. That's the nature of war. So it wasn't a big deal for them to sit there and say, well, we could go after Samson for these meager 30 people, or as a military, we can continue fighting our battle front, which is the rest of Israel that we're still fighting against. So the Philistines aren't too interested in going after one man. Minor disturbance, as far as they're concerned. Until now. Why? Because he did some big damage to him this time. He said, okay, enough's enough. This guy's a nuisance. We're going to get rid of him. course, eventually they do. They do it the long route, and it's quite deadly for them. So they go up against Judah because they know where he's at. They know he's at Etam, which is down here. I have a little drawn little map. It's south of Jerusalem. Lehi, which is kind of in between Etam and Timnah. Timnah, of course, is the area where his father-in-law and wife lived and now are now probably ashes. They lay themselves out at Lehi. What does Lehi mean? You've heard of, was it Hamburger Hill? You've heard of that?
Yes.
Back World War II, I think it was.
Yeah.
I think it's World War II. A cream? Oh, yeah, something like that. But, it's one of those. It has, they have these little hills. Well, it's named after something that was very horrific and something that this, just a deadly thing happened. Well, he's no different. Well, he's called Jawbone. Lehi's Jawbone. Jawbone is Lehi. It's the same word. It's just Jawbone. Jawbone Hill, actually. Why? Who do you think named it? Take a wild guess. Well, that's where it was. That's what happened, and that's what it's named after, because of what he did. Now, it wasn't named Lehi
at that
time.
Came on that.
It became known as Lehi after Samson's fight. That's been its name. No, Samson didn't write his story. Who did? Samuel did.
Samuel.
It's already been named Lehi by the time he's born. It's been Lehi for years. That's what it's called the same. So he uses that term. At Samson's time, it wasn't. It wasn't called that. We don't know what it's called, but it wasn't called Lehi. Because Lehi is Jawbone. It wasn't called Jawbone. Something else. Whatever it was, we don't know. It was something else.
So just like Hamburger Hill was a reference to the Vietnam War, where they call it that because people died going back.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's just it wasn't that before, but it is now, and we all know it is what it is now. We know its current name. Whatever it currently was before, I'm sure somebody probably has it written down. But
they still had a number.
Yeah.
We're trying to take
you on
33
years. Well, in Korea, it was definitely like that.
Yeah.
In Korea, something like that. All the mountains had numbers for the most part, unless
something important happened on him or something. There's a lot of hills. Okay, so let's keep going. This guy, it's really interesting when he gets to his riddle. Okay, so they line up. They go to Judah. Just says, "What are you doing?" They say, "We want Samson." Okay, we'll go get him for you. They go to Etam. 3,000 men. Why would Judah send 3,000 men? Now, granted, it could be clans. 1,000 makes no difference. Point is, a whole lot of guys were sent to go arrest Samson. Yes, Tammy.
They already knew he could take on 30.
Exactly. They knew he had a lot of strength. They knew he had a lot of power behind him, and they knew God was with him. So we're going to just let him go one guy. The chance of the one guy coming back was pretty slim. So they figured a lot, maybe make him more viable.
Show of force.
Did they need to?
No.
No, they didn't.
Show of force.
It's just show of force. That's their function. But they didn't need to. Why? Why would they fear Samson?
Well, Why would they fear Samson?
Why would they not fear him?
Oh, because he's fighting for them, or he's fighting. He's dealing with the Philistines, not
them. So they didn't need to send 3,000 guys.
Right.
They could have sent one. Well, why would Samson go obey one? Why would he even bother?
Well, he's not obeying them, but God.
That's true. He is. Now, note when in this story. Now, granted, I realize it's been a few weeks, but as we're going through Samson's story, and it happens here as well, when does his strength show up?
When
the Spirit of God comes upon him. Alright? Not before, and not after. It's only at that moment. Now, if, just hypothetically speaking, if Samson was to go against Judah, would the Spirit of God come upon him to help him?
No.
No, it wouldn't. I think he knew it. He's not an idiot.
No.
He knew when he had this spirit inside of him, that overwhelming strength, and go off and do something. And he knew when he didn't have it. That's why it's recorded. And the Spirit of God came upon him. Well, who would know the Spirit of God came on him?
He did.
Well, he would know. He felt it. And he felt it when it didn't show up and when it wasn't there. So yeah, it wouldn't have mattered. 3,000 men is excessive. It sounds interesting, the story. It is a show of force. Yes, Carrie.
Well, it's an interesting thing for the Philistines to see that
a whole bunch of guys,
3,000 Jews, had to
go off and go arrest him, which is a lot. That's a lot of men back then.
Yeah.
Now, granted, today population is a little different than it was then. 3,000 people is a whole lot of people there.
Well, it could
convey the idea that even they knew that they couldn't contain him.
That's true. It does. Yes, Tammy.
Even today, even though we live in a pretty big town, for you to round up 3,000 men willing to do a job for you.
Yeah. It takes a lot of work to do. It's a lot of people.
It would take some convincing, some coaxing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you'd have to understand, this is important. I need 3,000 men to do this. Oh, yeah? Well, am I going to give up my Sunday afternoon to go off with you?
Mm-hmm.
Here's why.
There's a gentleman who had to learn that lesson the hard way, one of David's soldiers. I can't remember if it was. Was it the one who was slaughtered?
Joab?
The Joab killed him. I can't think of the guy's name off the top of my head. But anyway, David said, hey, you got 3 days to round up as many men as you can. We're going to go to battle. And he doesn't show up in 3 days. So Joab goes off with his army. They go off to battle and they run across him. And he says, oh, how you doing? Gives him a hug and throws a sword through his belly and walks away. Because you didn't show up in 3 days. But Tammy's point, it takes a lot of work to get some guys mustered up to go do something. It's not an instantaneous event.
It depends on the incentive.
Yeah, it should. The incentive. That is true. There's not a lot of incentive for Judah to go except war against Philistines, which they already lost. Meaning Judah has lost that battle. They're already occupied. Other tribes haven't necessarily lost the battle, but Judah had. All right. So Judah didn't want to go fight again. They weren't ready to fight. It's been years, but they didn't have...
They're still recuperating.
They didn't have, say, God come save us. They thought they could do it on their own, and they lost. They don't want to go through that again. So they're not ready to go to war. That is their incentive. But we don't want to lose our families and die. Let's go arrest the guy. Samson is big a deal. Don't kill me. They said, fine, we won't kill you. Why? Because he already knew, as mentioned earlier, God wasn't going to help Samson kill Jews. That wasn't going to happen. So if Judah wanted to kill him, they could have done so. And he knew it. Deal, I'll go with you. I won't fight you, but don't kill me. Okay, agreed. We'll just arrest you. Fair enough. Now he had his way out. He can make his way without any trouble. So they bind him with two new ropes, or two really big, thick, fat ones. Now, we don't really know how big Samson actually was as a person. He's probably a little bigger than average, my guess. I don't know how large. He may have been, you know, could be 10 feet tall for all I know. But I don't think he was quite that large. Because the reason I don't think so... Normally they mention things when somebody's abnormally big.
Goliath,
example. Saul is an example. Saul was a tall person. And David was big enough to wear Saul's armor. So he's a pretty good sized guy. And used Goliath's sword as his own. That's a pretty good sized person. They mention that. Did they mention that to Samson? No.
But he does carry a big, huge, giant gate. He must have been a big, husky man, I think.
Well, I'm not saying he was a shrimp. Don't get me wrong. But because it doesn't accentuate his size,
right.
Doesn't mention it, as it did Saul and it did Goliath, obviously. And in David's case, because he had to wear Saul's and use the same tools. I don't think he was an abnormally huge person. He was probably less than, I don't know, maybe a foot taller than I am. That's probably, which is still good size, but still it's not like he's like 10 feet. Yes, Bill.
Israel's always unmanned when they come get somebody else to do war against them when they're right with the father. So why would he have to be a real big, giant, huge guy?
He doesn't have to be a big, huge, giant, huge guy. He doesn't need to be. Because God will take care of him. Just has to be strong and the willingness to do it.
He wasn't sitting
exactly. That's where his strength is.
He wasn't sitting at a computer and running a car back and forth.
Yes, he didn't have a desk job. Okay, so he comes to Lehi, which is a jawbone hill. Philistines start shouting, like, yada, yada, yada. Spirit of God comes on him. The ropes melt off of him like flaxseed that's been burned. I've never burned flaxseed. I'm sure somebody probably has heard of flaxseed being burned. I'm guessing it's very flimsy and weak.
Linen,
I guess. I don't know much about flax. I know that people eat it, but that's about it. I don't know a whole lot about it.
Flax is also what linen is made from.
Oh, it is made from. Oh, okay. That's what you're saying, linen. Okay, I didn't realize flax is that's used from flax. Okay. It melts off, grabs a jawbone, takes out 1,000 Philistines. I have on my little board here. I have Samson's name up top. That I'm trying to learn to do that a little bit more to try to put their name and how they would have spelt it. I didn't put the vowels and whatnot. It doesn't really matter because they didn't have vowels during their time. They have vowels now, but not then. Next word, Hamor. Anybody remember that word? It's been a long time. Do you remember who Shechem's dad was? Hamor.
The donkey.
The donkey. All right? No, just donkey. Okay, so what? Donkey. Yeah, he's a donkey's ball. Obviously, that's what Hamor means, right? Donkey. Well, it kind of means just that. But as I mentioned before, Samson seems to use riddles. I want to read to you what he actually would have said if we tried to translate English, other than the word that's in place there. Well, see what you guys happen to have caught by this. It's just interesting. So Samson, this is verse 16. So Samson then said, with the jawbone of a donkey, donkey upon donkeys, with the jawbone of a donkey, I've struck 1,000 men. Notice this heaps.
Yeah, the heap.
Well, the word donkey and the word heap in Hebrew are completely identical.
Beast of burden.
There is no distinction. They pronounce the same. They're spelt the same. They're used interchangeably. There is no separation between donkey and heap. Now, we look at that, well, that doesn't make any sense. A donkey is an animal and a heap isn't. All right, these don't make... You can't use them interchangeably. Well... You can if you want to use play on words. Yes, Jeff.
I don't know if sometimes you've seen some of these donkeys that come in from harvest. They look like a heap.
All of the stuff piled up on them.
It's just amazing. It's almost like twice as
a moving heap.
Little animal.
Yep. Yes, it is. It is. And of course, that's what the donkeys use for. They are pack animals for a reason. So not that the words should never be used interchangeably. It's just that us in English, we don't use words like that interchangeably.
Yeah, you
heap something. Yeah, what was that?
You heap, move your...
Yeah, exactly. There's a difference. Now, in his case, he didn't make a distinction. He used these words with a donkey's jawbone. I created a heap and heaps, or heap upon heaps, meaning very large pile of dead Philistines. What an odd riddle. Or odd statement. Is he trying to say something here? Well, knowing Samson, the last time he said something, yeah, he doesn't talk much, by the way. Well, he does talk.
You better listen.
You listen to him.
Speak softly and carries a big job.
Yes. Well, well, let's think a little bit as far as what could this mean. Why would he use this play on words? And of course, the place is then called Jawbone Hill after this endeavor of his. Why would he use these play on words? What is... I'm going to strike your memory a little bit. What is a donkey, biblically speaking?
A replacement for the firstborn.
Replacement of a firstborn. So let's go ahead and write that down, if that's okay with you. So a donkey... How do you spell donkey? D-O-N-K-E-Y. Thank you. I keep on saying with a C. I don't know why. I'll do a kind of similar to first born. That's what I was asking for the verses earlier today. It's similar to firstborn. Now, what do you know about donkeys in the Bible?
Burden animal.
Yeshua rode in on one.
Yeah, saved, was it Balaam?
Saved his butt. They talk occasionally. During the process of saving Balaam, they talk. Hamor died.
Sign of humility.
What was that?
Sign of humility or humility?
No, donkeys aren't a sign of humility. They're a sign of something else, which will, it's similar, but not quite. Yes.
Judges rode donkeys. Now, what is
yes, they rode donkeys.
What did that have to do with it?
Well, we're getting there. We're gonna discuss this a little bit and flesh it out some. Why don't you think a little bit? It's not an easy thing to translate the word donkey to what God sees when He says donkey. And we understand trees, right? God says, "Oh, well, there are trees." What do we understand trees are?
People.
So when God says donkey, it is
someone has a responsibility.
Someone with a task.
What?
Someone that has a task.
Has a task with a job.
They have a job. Yeah, they have a job.
And fulfill their function.
Which?
The judge is riding.
The judge is riding donkeys. Hence the Messiah riding a donkey. Now here's the key. There's something unique about donkeys as opposed to, you know, a horse or opposed to a cow, besides the fact that it's unclean. How do you redeem an unclean animal? You just pay its price. Firstborn of any animal, whether it be clean or unclean, man or not, you pay the redeemed price. I take it back. I'm sorry. Firstborn of clean, you do not redeem. I take it back. You cannot redeem or redeem a clean animal.
Not what's supposed to be in the sanctuary.
Right, right. You can't redeem a clean one. Yeah. There's no reason. That's not acceptable. But you already redeem all unclean animals. Money.
Money-wise.
That includes man, human beings. I mentioned, I don't know if half of you guys were here. Well, I guess some of them was here. At the feast, I had to redeem my son. Why? He's a month old. He's firstborn male, or firstborn in general, but he has to be firstborn male as well. Redeemed is required. One exception, a donkey. So let's go to Exodus 13:13. A donkey is the exception of the unclean animals. It's not that it's not to be redeemed. It just has a unique consequence.
Wouldn't they break its neck if they didn't redeem it? Yeah.
Well, when you redeem an unclean animal, you redeem it with money. It has a valuation based on its function and what the current exchange rate may be, dictated by the high priest at that moment in time. All right, high priest values a dollar to it. Human beings are being done the exact same way. It just has to be fixed at 5 shekels. Now, how much shekels worth dictates, you know, whatever happened to be the going exchange rate. But
and your age.
And your age. So Exodus 13, I'm just going to read, we'll go ahead and read, read verse 11 through, for a little while. I'll start verse 11. And it shall be, when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and gives it to you, that you shall set apart to the Lord all that open the womb, that is, every firstling that comes from an animal which you have, males shall be the Lord's. But every firstling of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you will not redeem it, then you shall break its neck. And all firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. So it shall be when your son asks you a time to come, saying, what is this? That you shall say to him, by strength of hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, by the out of the house of bondage. We're going to stop there for a while. Is a man redeemed with a lamb?
No.
How about a cow isn't redeemed at all, actually? Let's use another animal. Yeah, here we do it. An ostrich?
No.
Horse? Anything else? No. Donkey? Yes. You can't pay. You can't use a goat. You can't use a cow to pay the donkey. Must be a lamb, which is redemption. Donkeys are symbolic of firstborn. That is their function. Well, where did I get that from? God redeemed all the people of Israel when he pulled them out of Egypt via a lamb. The lamb had to die to preserve all of them. And he said, you are all my firstborn. Over time, he said, I will take the Levites instead of all the rest of you. So as a result, all of you have to pay your redemption value. It was a shekel at the time. The Levites will take. He actually exchanged at that moment. To redeem a donkey with a lamb is no different than redeeming Israel with the lamb. Okay? The same thing. We just went through Passover.
Firstborn.
It's a firstborn. That's its function. All right? That's where the symbolism is showing up.
Because the first and the lamb.
And the lamb, exactly. They're the symbols that God's using. So when God, as I mentioned earlier, says trees, they, we know those are people. So when he says donkey, we know that is firstborn. That's its function. It has a task, as we discussed earlier. They have a job. So let's go back to Samson for a minute. Yeah, I was going to say, well, get my notes. Oh, yes, Tammy.
I was just thinking about Balaam's donkey. When Balaam kept beating the donkey, when she finally spoke up, she basically says, "Why are you beating me? I'm just doing my job."
Exactly. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, which is to protect him.
Yeah, that's the function.
That's the function. That's what they do. Now, well, they don't think of using donkey as protectors, but in that case, in Balaam's case and in Messiah's case, that is the function. To exalt what is important. To raise up that which is of greater value.
And to carry the burden.
Yeah, it's not an easy task. So let's move back to Samson for a minute. Now, granted, I wrote down Genesis 34, which is the story of Hamor and the defilement of Dinah, how you pronounce her name. And, of course, Levi and Simeon went and slaughtered the whole town of Shechem. But we won't get there in a minute. We won't get that today. That's Hamor, just happens to be the donkey, which is the Shechem's father. He's the one who's in control of it. He's the one who dictated what happened, what didn't happen. Did Hamor, meaning Shechem's father, did he exalt what is valuable?
No.
No. So what'd you do? You break his neck. He's not redeemable. So he died. Philistines. Now let's get back to Samson's story. This is actually interesting interplay here. I like Samson for this reason. He has great insight. I don't want to give him too much credit or not, but he has good insight in my opinion. Okay, so as I mentioned before, donkey upon donkeys, the dropping of a donkey, I have made heaps upon heaps. Firstborn upon firstborn.
Yeah.
I have created with a firstborn. Right? So Samson grabs up with the firstborn, I have created firstborns upon firstborns, and not one is redeemable. They're all dead. Alright? Because they're not to be redeemed. Let's reword this again. It's kind of interesting. With my Redeemer, the Jawbone, I have created or killed the unredeemable upon unredeemable, because they're dead. Israel has not asked for God's help yet, so he can't help Israel. But he can still talk to them. It's supposed to give you a sense, a sign of what's actually happening. Is that in Samson's case, he took what is a redeemed animal, or is an unredeemed, a dead one, a donkey, and actually didn't redeem Israel.
He just passed judgment on the unredeemable.
He just passed judgment on the unredeemable. Because he can't deal with Israel. But he can deal with the Philistines. So what does that tell you?
That's when the Spirit of God moved upon him to do that too.
Yes, it did. Yeah, it hadn't left yet. What does that tell you? Well, it's a little confusing. So I realize this is not an easy task to grasp riddles. When you're dealing with Samson, that's what your job is. So you have a redeemed animal, meaning a donkey, a job. Now, we don't know if the animal has died from natural causes. It doesn't make much difference. The point is, it's a redeemable, one that can be redeemed through one process, the death of a lamb. All right? By killing another donkey because you don't have a lamb, guess what? The donkey dies. So you cannot redeem it if you don't have a lamb. There is no money. You have to have a lamb to do it. So what is he telling the Israelites about the Philistines? The lamb will not redeem them. They're not redeemable. There is no lamb to redeem Philistines. What they have done is not repairable in God's eyes. The Redeemer, I'm trying to word this a bunch of ways, the Redeemer will not redeem them.
Salvation will not come to them.
Salvation will not come to them. It has, did, and will come to Israel, not the Philistines. It's giving them information.
Not saved.
Yeah. God's not with them. The one who took you out of Egypt, he covered you with a lamb because you are the firstborn. These guys are not. They're not the firstborn. God didn't cover them. God is not with them. It's a message. So God talks in really odd ways sometimes, but it's much like talking through a prophet. Sometimes you kind of lose some of the symbolism of what's going on here. Samson's no different. He's more of a prophet in many ways than he is a judge, per se, because he wasn't really much of a law scholar. But his life was a prophecy. And he talked in riddles, and this is a great riddle. This is a great symbolism. Now, did anybody get it? Well, yes. If you heard the words that were coming out of his mouth, you probably would have. Because we read it as donkey and heaps. They would have heard, with a donkey, I have created donkeys upon donkeys. It'll catch your attention. Might note, there are 3,000 Jewish people standing there waiting and listening and watching this happen. They heard it. They knew what they heard. They may not have understood everything, but they knew what they heard, which is a unique statement. It's a very unique statement which he had made. So he's telling them that there are those who are redeemable, meaning a lamb has died to save your behind, and then those who are not redeemable. There is no lamb to protect them or save them. God's not with them. He's with us. There aren't 3,000 dead, or there's 1,000 dead Jews there. 1,000 dead Philistines. So there's a difference. It's a great distinction that he's making. He doesn't stop there. God doesn't stop there. So when you have a redeemer, what do you have?
Life.
Life.
You have life. What comes next?
What comes next? That's great. So you have life when you have a redeemer. So Samson gets through slaughtering all these Philistines. What comes upon him next?
He's dying.
Of thirst. He's dying of thirst. Well, I have it down here as well, John 7:38. The whole flowing rivers of living water, you recall that statement? Mm-hmm. It's in the tabernacle's time. So what comes forth from the Jawbone Hill?
Water
that gives life. So it actually brings more symbols going on.
The firstborn was killed, water came from there.
The firstborn was killed, water came forth. That's important.
Yes.
Yeah.
It brought forth more life, and it gave life back to Samson. Yet another symbol of his existence and who he was and what he lived like. Like I said, he didn't talk a whole lot. Like some of the other judges, they talk a lot. He didn't talk much. He talks a little bit. More of it is his life that's actually key. How he lived and the things he did. He understood symbols very, very well. Much more so than I think any other judge I've ever heard of. With possible exception of one who did the whole tree thing, which we discussed back in... Abimelech was judge in his... I probably got his name off the top of my head. He understood symbols really well, too. But Samson did a lot more stuff. His interesting symbols. He didn't stick with just one, like, trees and bushes. He stuck with a lot of his symbols. We'll discuss some more as he gets there. And we go through his rest of his story. He actually runs across a few more. So this is what Samson's like. This is what he did. When he takes out the Philistines, meaning pointed out they are not redeemable. Israel, you are. Meaning God is not with the Philistines. God is with Judah. Great distinction here. God brings forth life out of the jawbone, out of the place that the donkey was, out of the donkey. The jawbone they used, it didn't come physically out of the bone itself, it's out of a hill, it's a spring that's there. But if the name's the same, that God brought life out of it. Any other questions or comments? It's quite interesting. I love the symbols that the story of Samson brings out. They're quite fascinating. I don't know if I have any other comments. I'll make sure I didn't leave anything out. Check my notes real quick. Nope, those are all my notes. So I don't think I missed any questions. I know people had some questions, but I think I got them. I don't know for sure. I don't remember all of them. Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully so.
Except there's one you asked earlier.
Oh, about the order?
Yeah.
Samson.
The sequence. Okay, thank you for about that. That shouldn't take long. Okay, so Let's see how to word this better. All right. Don't use the symbolism of burning people and burning wheat necessarily interchangeable. Sometimes they can be, but sometimes they're not. So that, just as a general rule, don't associate. You can in this case, but just don't do it normally. Okay?
It's not a rule.
It's not a rule. The wheat is not always people. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Depends on who you're talking about. Yeah, depends on who you're talking about and what kind of group of people. Because Israelites are not wheat.
No.
No, that's not wheat.
The animals are.
Yeah, they're barley. Why? Well, what's that mean? Well, barley is early.
First harvest.
They're the first. Wheat is the last grain harvest. The Jews are not last.
They're first.
They're well within the first category.
That's why it's called Paul says.
Yeah. They've defined first. Okay. Christians have defined last. All right. So there's a distinction there. Burning up those who are last. They're burning up the wheat. Burning up the Philistines. Same principle. All pretty much interchangeable. Not always, but they are in this case. So, him burning up the wheat is no different than symbolically telling them you are going to be burned up. All right. Not to say the Philistines got that. They probably didn't. They're not that intelligent when it comes to Israelite symbolism. That's not their forte. But Israelites probably got it. Maybe. I hope they would have. A few of them might have. They might have grasped that the whole burning up of crops is the definition of killing people off. Why? Because you can't eat when you're dead. You can't eat when there's no food. Because you're dead. You're all dead. So, burning crops is no different than killing people. Try to think things very agriculturally. Because when you kill crops, guess what? As I mentioned, people die because they starve to death.
It proves a slow point.
Proves a slow point?
If you take someone's food away.
Yeah.
You're not just walking and killing them, you know, passing judgment.
It lets them think about it as they go down.
They get to think about and come to an understanding of the judgment that's been passed and slowly die as a result of it.
Exactly. Now, in the father-in-law and wife's case, now in their case, it's slightly different. Not too much, but slightly different. One is that death was supposed to be the burning of the crops was supposed to be slow. It was a symbolic, you have been lacking Philistines. You have done something that was unacceptable. You've accepted adultery in your area, which is even in Philistine law is not allowed. So that burning of crops was supposed to be for all of Philistines. They took the symbol of burning crops and said, well, let's burn the ones that are actually responsible. In Samson's case, the whole tit for tat, meaning I've repaid them the way they've repaid me. They took his wife from him. Literally, they took her away. She's gone. It's a little bit difficult, but in his case, because they took something that was cherished and valuable, his wife, however much he liked it, we don't know, he took something that was cherished and valuable from them. All right? They took his life, so he took their life. Symbolically.
Got it.
They didn't actually take Samson's life and kill him. They didn't kill his wife either. But they took the life that he wanted and took it away. The life that he longed for. So, symbolically, you take my life, then symbolically, I will take yours.
Kind of like kill him in the soul.
Yeah, exactly. He was not intending to slaughter them at this point. Yes. He was not intending to slaughter a bunch of people. Adultery, though, is a sin that can be killed for. It's still, he wasn't intending to do that. That was the Philistines doing after they killed somebody when they shouldn't have. They shouldn't have killed him. All they had to do was go ask Samson, what can we do to make this right? We knew we were wrong. What can we do to make this right?
They already knew his reputation.
Exactly. They knew what was happening. They took it upon themselves to enforce an additional punishment that they shouldn't have done. That's all. It's a taking of, you took my life, I take yours. Not physically, but symbolically. I hope that kind of makes sense. It's a little difficult.
No.
It's a little bit difficult. It's a little difficult.
Almost everything in his life is symbolic.
That's true, it is.
I was thinking there was a third portion to what he's talking about as far as the retribution, but he's not even talking about them killing them. He's just talking about what her father did, what that took from him,
right?
To what he
and the Philistine society right. should have known.
They accepted it. Yeah, the Philistine society accepted what his father and was yeah. and wife was father-in-law and wife was doing. Okay. They didn't say, "Oh, you guys shouldn't do this." That wasn't the case. Okay, I hope I answered that question. A little difficult, but I hope I answered. Any other comments or questions that I missed? Let's call it quits.